Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I had a great weekend. I hope you did, too. I was on tour up in Edmonton, Canada, doing shows. Had a great time. It was a blast. Great turnout. Crowds were out. It was fun. Met a lot of cool people. I met natives. I met East Indians. I met people from Trinidad. I met Canadians, of course. And I've been saying a lot. And it was fantastic. And I only lost two fingers to frostbite. So I think it was a win-win. And then on the flight back, I had 4 hours of a forearm war with the guy sitting next to me. And he had a very hairy forearm. It was really frightening. And it went on. You know, I push a little, he push a little, I push a little. He wasn't doing anything. He was just sitting there eating Swedish fish. I was typing. I was working. I needed the elbow space on the, you know, sharing the old armrest. So I came within 30 seconds of stabbing him in the neck, but I didn't. Instead, I just bit my lower lip and bled like a gutted fish. But anyway, I had a great time in Edmonton. And if you want to see me doing stand-up in the New York area, I'm going to be at Gotham Comedy Club, February 23rd and 24th, right here in Manhattan on 23rd Street. February 23rd and 24th, Friday and Saturday, Gotham Comedy Club, doing 5 shows. Come on out. Always a blast. Beautiful club. So if you're in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area, you know, come from Edmonton. I came to see you. You come to see me now. And let's get to my guest. Really, really fascinating guy, an innovator, an entrepreneur, and someone who's trying to really do something different with journalism and the media's coverage of politics. Mr. Cenk Uygur, who is the founder and creator of the Young Turks Network. Really cool conversation with him about how that got started. And his life and career before the network was started, and what he sees for the future of politics in America, and the media's coverage of politics, more importantly. He's got some really interesting, and not too radical, but definitely different views as to how the media should be operating. So enjoy it, and hopefully see you guys February 23rd and 24th at Gotham Comedy Club. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Paul Mercurio, and with me is as we were just saying off air, a man of many hats, CEO, founder, and host of the Young Turks Network, former host on MSNBC and current TV, Cenk Uygur. Hey, nice to have you on the show, man. I've been a big fan of your stuff for quite a while.
Thank you so much, man. Great to be with you.
Yeah, yeah. I actually watched you a lot on Current TV and MSNBC, and I used to go on John Fugelsang's show as a friend of mine on Current TV. I thought that was a good network that had the right direction going before they, you know, disbanded. But I enjoyed your show on that a lot.
So you were the one who was watching.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I know. Well, I got two of my friends on Friday, so there was three of us on Fridays.
All right, great. Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
That helped our ratings such as they were.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So a lot going on. I mean, the U.S. is threatening everybody in the U.N. today with if you don't vote for the Jerusalem, recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. What's your take on all of that right now, and as well as the tax plan that's just got passed?
Yeah, I've got a lot of takes. Mm-hmm. We're thinking of renaming the show. Strong Opinions with Cenk Uygur. Okay, so...
Well, you've got Rebel Headquarters. Let's mention that. You just launched it's a live half-hour show, you know, covering grassroots progressive movement, candidates running to unseat establishment politicians, not just Republicans, but Democrats. And is that sort of obviously you still have Young Turks as a host of that, but is that sort of your sort of focus to really sort of energize the base, so to speak?
Yeah, definitely. So let me hit all those one by one. So
yeah.
First off, so Young Turks, for those of you who don't know, is live 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern. It's live on our website, tytnetwork.com, okay? And it's just like a TV show, except it's good.
yeah, exactly.
It's honest, and it's real,
right?
And it's sometimes raw, but I think people appreciate
it.
Well,
I liked your rant on Susan Collins the other day. I thought that was really spot on.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
And then at 8:05 Eastern, immediately after the Young Turks, we started a new show just at the beginning of last week, mm-hmm. called Rebel Headquarters. And that's supposed to be for all progressives to gather around and know what's going on. What are the protests that are happening? Who are the progressive candidates? Who are the good guys? Who are the bad guys? And to interview some of those people, ranging from Benjamin Jealous, former head of the NAACP, running for governor of Maryland. That's next week. We had Ro Khanna this week, who's a congressman from California, Congressman Raskin the week before, bunch of Justice Democratic candidates, and we're going to have a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters on, because Bernie Sanders supporters are almost not allowed on television.
Yeah.
So, great. Then
yeah. Or in the or in the Democratic presidential primary either, apparently,
exactly.
Yeah.
Now, that's terrible for the country, and I hope, and I pressure TV to change their ways all the time. That's why we did Rebel Headquarters. Okay, if we're the Rebel Alliance, fine. This is our headquarters.
Right.
Everybody come check it out. Right?
Do you feel like you're sort of tilting at windmills? I mean, does this progressive movement, I want it to take hold in a meaningful way. I mean, look, I go on all these shows as well, you know, CNN, MSNBC as a commentator, and there are two parties and they're not even talking to each other. They're just talking to their base and feeding them red meat. What do you feel like this can really take hold, this movement, or is just the establishment on the Democratic side just too entrenched?
Yeah, no, I'm enormously hopeful. And I'll tell you why. There's two reasons. One is my life is a lesson in optimism. We started the Young Turks out of my living room in a one-bedroom apartment off of Sunset in L.A. We had nothing. We couldn't pay anyone for years and years and years, including us. And if you'd said in that, you know, crappy little living room, these guys are going to create the largest online news network in the world, people would have laughed you out of the room.
Right.
So sometimes people tell me something's impossible, and I say, luckily, I'm in the impossible business.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've done this a number of times, and I have great confidence we're going to do it again. Mm-hmm. Now, the second thing that's more important is we have the tide of history on our side. And I don't mean that in a general way and, you know, the arc of the moral universe bends towards justice. No. I mean 2020, we're going to rout conservatives, mm-hmm. absolutely positively rout them. Before that, we're going to have the epic battle of a lifetime with the Democratic establishment.
Yes.
And the Democratic establishment, well, look, Trump's a monster, right? Mm. We all know that. He's the worst of the worst, et cetera. Mm. He's unstable, threatens the world. Mm. So he is the more immediate threat. But the permanent threat, the threat that has dominated us for 40, 50 years here, is the establishment of both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, in fact, rigged the system by allowing corporations and billionaires to donate to politicians by privatizing our elections mm-hmm. and capturing our government. Mm-hmm. So when you go to fight against that machine, that is a much more formidable machine.
Mm-hmm.
Trump's a one-off, right? And we can't afford to relax on that. You've got to make sure that fascism doesn't take hold in the country. But the deeper threat is the one of the establishment that is going to throw everything they have at you to try to stop progress and change. But we will defeat them because, look, it's not just optimism. Let me keep it real. There is a tremendous anger in the country.
Mm.
And part of the reason why I said Bernie Sanders would catch Hillary Clinton, I said he had a chance to do it. He certainly did. He closed a 60-point lead. I said Trump would win earlier on in the election cycle, and that came to fruition, not because I like Trump, but because I saw the anger and I saw how much the American people hate the establishment.
Yeah.
And New York and D.C., the guys in the media, they don't acknowledge that because they are the establishment and they don't want to see the reality.
Right.
But the reality is people are pissed.
Yeah. Jeff Fager, the executive producer of 60 Minutes on the show, and he talked about having an off-camera conversation with Trump around the time that, you know, he was really getting steam and Trump said, I don't know if I'm going to win, but there's definitely something happening out there because these rallies are insane, even more so than I expected. Like even Trump, you know, off camera was like, yeah, there's something. I knew there was some discontent, but not to this level. And I think that you're absolutely right about the money that's flowed in. But we also we hear that conversation a lot. What changes this time around where you think a pushback will work?
Oh, so I say this not in the way that everybody else does. So I'll be more specific about it.
Yeah.
So first, the answer is the internet. Now, people loosely talk about the internet, and you know, upstart candidates, you'll ask them how you're going to win, and they'll say the internet. That doesn't really mean anything. Yes, but what are you going to do on the internet?
Right, right. Right.
So it's just a tool. What I mean when I say the internet is, it has done two things. One is it has changed the culture for people under the age of now, I would say, all the way to 45. Mm-hmm. So if you grew up on television, you grew up on pulp, you grew up on broad information meant for the masses and usually meant to placate the masses. Mm. If you grew up on the internet, you grew up with all of the world's information and knowledge at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. That has made a gigantic sea change difference in the culture. There is no bigger cultural difference in America than between the young and the old.
Right.
It's not between Republicans and Democrats or between genders or between races. It's the young and the old because they literally grew up in a different culture. So when I look online now, all the comments are aware of the donor class, and now they are furious at the donor class. And every time these politicians sell us out for their donors, we catch them every single time now. Mm-hmm. Before, because of the just incredibly pro-establishment television channels, cable news guys, networks, et cetera, they never got caught. So right. That's why they keep getting surprised.
Right.
Like when Cory Booker got his hand caught in the cookie jar when he was trying to help his insurance company donors, he was like, whoa, what in the world just happened to me?
Right. Well, I'm with you, man. My wife more than once has caught me screaming at the TV, especially during the primary and then the general election with Trump, and everybody sitting there, whether it's MSNBC or CNN, going, this isn't the way things are done. Look at the way he's talking. Is he ever going to become presidential? Is it? No, it's changed. I think it's not just changed during his presidency. This is a different dynamic, and the establishment doesn't want to recognize that there is an upheaval that's trying to take place right now, more so on the right than the left, not just with regards to politics, but with regards to media's coverage of politics and how broad the definition of media is now in 2017 versus in 2000.
Yeah. And look, it's bipartisan too. So Bob Corker just got caught with his hand in the cookie jar.
Right.
Switching his vote so that he can get richer through his real estate property.
And then he yelled at the media this morning saying, oh, you know, you guys, you know, now he suddenly agrees with Donald Trump that the media is evil. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's
well, one of our guys, David Sirota, a TYT contributor, broke that story.
That's great.
And I'm so proud of them. And because why? We're paying attention.
Yeah.
You put something into a bill that didn't exist before, we're going to catch you.
Yeah.
It's not like the old days where you can just get Morning Joe to cover for you.
Right. The Kennedy days where you go bang Marilyn Monroe, then you write sign a couple of things, and no one's saying anything because it's all on the down low. What about the other side of this though, which is the true fake news, not the Donald Trump fake news, which is basically just stories he doesn't like, but you know, this disinformation on Facebook, not just the Russians, but in general, it's planning fake stories. Only have so much of an ability to sort of discern what's fact and what's fiction. So it's sort of the other edge of the sword in a way. Right. And how do we control that, if at all?
Yeah. Look, nobody gets it more than we do because we live and breathe on the internet. So, and the alt-right despises us.
Yeah.
Probably hates us more than anything else on the planet.
Yeah.
And so they attack us nonstop with one fake thing after another. It ranges from now the relatively simple and it seems like the good old days of taking quotes out of context, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the way to photoshopping our pictures, doxing us, sending people our home address, calling for violence. I mean, it's just gross.
And that's my concern because the real fake stories, it's making you know, it's the whole barrel looks bad. One bad apple, right? It's sort of like, and then they seize on that, and that's the game. And it's, and there's, it's very important that there are networks like you and reporters and journalists like you online that aren't beholden to the, you know, Comcast that owns NBC, et cetera, and CBS. It's like, it's, but I'm worried that there's an erosion of what you do. You know, Charlie Sykes talked about this. Charlie Sykes says that he created his own monster. And he has this great book, How the Right Lost Its Mind. And he said, you know, I jumped on board when I had my conservative show on radio show in Wisconsin. And I would say, you know, the liberal media is, you know, they're making up stories, blah, blah, blah. And then the very thing that I helped create ended up devouring me, because when he started to speak out against Trump, that band of people like the alt-right then started attacking him and called him fake news. So my concern is that it might be a small part of the internet now, but what if it gobbles you and everybody else up?
No, it's not that it's going to gobble us up. That's not my concern. I mean, we're way larger than them. A recent analysis said that it was a big breakthrough moment that every right-wing video site on YouTube combined finally passed the Young Turks. All of them combined.
All right, good. Then I don't have to buy a ticket to move out of the country. I feel a little better now.
Right. No, they're not coming for us. We're coming for them.
Good.
Now, having said that, what the alt-right, I think, doesn't get in their infinite stupidity is that they're actually, in a way, the establishment's best friend.
Mm.
And the reason for that, and I don't think they intend to be in their case, but the reason that they are unwittingly is because it allows the establishment to say, oh, ignore everything on the internet. Let's just go back to the way things were.
Mm.
Okay, shut it down. Let's go back to TV. Let's, you know, controlled opposition, controlled media.
Mm-hmm.
Tell everybody Bob Corker's an honorable gentleman from Tennessee, and that Cory Booker is a wonderful progressive from New Jersey, and that none of them serve their donors, right?
Mm.
Just bottle it back up. And then they could point to the fake news that the alt-right creates online and go, see, ignore everything online.
Right.
And since I can't tell the difference between the alt-right and sensible people online, because I'm lazy / I'm motivated to not do that because they're my competition.
Yeah, apparently a story about
everything online.
Right, because I'll actually start to believe that Hillary Clinton had underage kids in a pizza parlor basement and all this. Not right. So people just get too lazy and they, yeah. So, but why does that help? Why does that help? Help you? Help the cause? And help the establishment?
No, it doesn't help me at all. By being so malicious and spreading fake news, the alt-right unfortunately drags everyone online down.
Right.
But it helps the establishment, because the establishment hates the internet. They hate new media.
Right.
They hate that you're getting information about what they're up to.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would argue that, look, the internet is holding up a mirror to humanity.
Right.
And so what you're going to find there is wonderful things, great parts of humanity, and also the worst parts of humanity.
Right.
That's who we are.
It's real life.
Yeah.
Right.
TV made everything vanilla because they had to sell stuff to Walmart.
Yeah.
And so they took off all the rough edges and polished the living hell out of it until it became totally uninteresting and vapid. Right.
Yeah.
The internet is the opposite. It's too interesting. Right? I mean, it's got the truth. It's got madness. It's got
the
best kind of news when you find out about Corker and what he's done. And I can give 1,000 examples. And it's got the worst kind of fake news.
Yeah.
Because it's humanity all at once connected.
Right.
So I'm not going to go back on that. Yeah. So I see the downsides. I'm not unaware of that.
Mm.
But I'm not going to turn back on this wonderful creation because a couple of bad actors are trying to ruin it. And I'm not going to let the establishment smear it in them.
Yeah. You can't, can you do your show on TV in any meaningful way? I don't think you can, right? Because of what we're saying, like the way you want to do journalism and the way it should be done. Is there anywhere you think you can do it on television, traditional television?
Yeah. So, Apparently not, because we tried, right? We tried. So Current TV was fine. That was a whole different situation.
Yeah.
But on MSNBC, I went after both Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah.
And I literally got pulled aside by Phil Griffin, giving a speech about how NBC is not outsiders, they're insiders, and I have to act more like the establishment. It was unbelievable.
And he denied he had, he said that to you too, which was really interesting. Right. I really liked your show, and then they put Al Sharpton in, and I just like almost jumped out the window. Like, you know, that is not.
Well, I'm glad you didn't.
That's but you know what, that's the great thing about the internet is that, you know, a voice like, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, a voice like yours would have just been shut down and, you know, you'd go off into the sunset, but you turned around and you just created this monster on the internet, which they can't ignore now.
Yeah. Well, try as they might.
Yeah.
So,
you and I have a similar background. You were a lawyer. I was a lawyer. And you practiced in New York and I did too. I did corporate M&A law, and then I left to go into comedy and all this other craziness that I do. But when you were in law school, you know, you were very active in at Penn, Columbia, and were actually at one time more of a conservative bent and then went progressive. Did you see yourself becoming a voice like this in politics and in journalism when you were practicing, or did this sort of just happened organically to you?
It happened super organically. So
that's what happened to me too. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a guy who worked here a long time ago, and he was just working here as a producer to pay the bills. Mm. He's actually a movie film director, and he wound up asking me for permission to shoot stuff behind the scenes, and I let him, and then he turned it into a movie called Mad as Hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot about myself in that movie. And after,
what did you learn?
So a woman came up to me and said, "It sounds like in the beginning of your career, you had this big voice, but you didn't know what to do with it. At some point, you found the right message for that voice."
Hmm.
And I think that's exactly right. I mean, I was a knucklehead Republican who was in some ways a jerk. At Penn, I held a pro-war rally in favor of the Persian Gulf War. I wrote some stupid stuff that I now look back and get mortified over.
Yeah, criticized affirmative action at Penn and argued that Clarence Thomas was treated unjustly during his stay. You were full on Make America Great Again, man.
But
this is what's so really interesting about you and why I wanted, another reason I wanted to talk to you is because obviously all of what you're doing, but the person behind it that you, then you made a shift, and what prompted this shift, and was it a struggle or was it just an immediate turnaround for you?
No, it was definitely a long process. So it is a long story, but I'll try to make it as quick as I can.
Mm.
And you can ask about any of the details you like. So I grew up as a liberal Republican in New Jersey, and my dad was a small business owner, and we thought there was too much regulation and mm-hmm. we need to balance the budget and stuff like that. Right.
Mm.
And then, slowly I began to realize, Republicans never balance the budget. So what are we doing here? Then my dad called me one night, and he's like, "Cenk, I was watching Bill O'Reilly. I think he might be full of shit." And I was like, "Really?" Back then, you know, we're Republicans and all that thing.
Born of Turkish descent, but you're first generation American, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
And every once in a while, there'd be some stark evidence that they were, in fact, full of shit. And one time, so I'm down in Miami, I'm working local TV there. I'm a Republican still at that point, but I think that Elian Gonzalez should be sent home to his dad because it's his dad.
Right.
And that's the non-Republican position. But, you know, I'm an independent thinker. And besides which, I'm a liberal Republican. Right. So now that, of course, doesn't exist anymore. But so I go down there to Little Havana with a sign that says, "Send Elian home." I get attacked by a mob of angry Cubans who assault me, punch me, kick me, pinch my ass. It was a weird, surreal thing, right?
And make then, you play dominoes.
Yeah. Well, that would have been more pleasant.
Yeah, exactly.
So Fox News, I think, including O'Reilly, goes on the air that night and says, oh, yeah, that guy's a well-known communist spy.
Oh, God.
What? I'm like, I guess my dad was right.
Your dad calls you up. Are you a communist spy? I see you. What are you doing?
That's a pro-Castro agitator. I'm like, I hate Castro.
Right? God.
So they make up stuff all the time. And then Bush happened. And so Gore was the first Democrat I ever voted for in 2000 because, like, I watched the debates. This Bush guy's an idiot.
Yeah.
And that was also.
So were you at you're on the precipice then? I'm going, I'm not sure about this conservative thing. And then you see Bush and it really starts to push you over the line.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And and it also started to push me against the mainstream media because I'm like, why won't they say it? It's so obvious. Here I am, a Republican. I want to vote for Bush, but the guy is nearly mentally damaged. Like, it's so obvious. And they kept calling it even. And I'm like, how was that debate even? One guy is really smart, and I might not agree with him on everything, but clearly knows what he's talking about.
Why don't you think
anything?
Why do you think they wouldn't call it the way it is? And why is it because they want to get all these establishment stars on their networks for ratings, so they don't want to alienate the establishment?
So there's a huge number of factors. Yes, access is huge. They want access to Republicans, and Republicans continually threaten them with access. Secondarily, they have been bullied by the right wing. They've been whining to the refs for 40 years about a liberal media. And so now they're so afraid of being called liberal that they don't even bring you the truth.
Right.
So they act neutral towards the truth, which is terrible, terrible journalism.
Right.
And also because they don't mind the system. I mean, if you're a multi-billion-dollar media corporation, do you want to rock the boat? Mm-mm. No, it's your boat.
Yeah.
Where does the money in politics go? It goes largely to TV ads.
Right.
So they love this system. Right. That's part of why cable news is so horrific. Mm. So anyway, and then finally, just straws that broke the camel's back are Iraq War. I thought it was the craziest thing I'd ever seen. It didn't make any sense. I'm out. I'm way gone now.
Yeah.
And then they started torturing people.
Yeah.
You know, and as you, when my job became to report the news for 3 hours a day, every day, it's not, the question isn't why I stopped being a Republican. The question is, why didn't everyone else?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
You see the track record of the Republican Party, and if you're not screaming for running out of the building with your hair on fire, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I pulled back going on Fox News because, I mean, you know, I'm progressive, but I go on. I feel like everybody should be talking to everybody, but it turned in the last, especially year, 18 months to like a whole other level where I'm like, I can't even walk in the building. It's just, you know, I was on a panel once and Obama had, there was several of us and it was an African-American gentleman who was a Republican and he Obama had said the Constitution was a flawed document, which it is. It was written to be that way, et cetera. Well, of course, they just, you know, their gimmick is they latch onto one thing and it cycles through the news cycle all day, right? So Obama, right? un-American. He should be impeached. He shouldn't be our president. And the African-American on the panel goes, yeah, that Constitution is written is a perfect document. And I snapped, I turned to him and I go, you can't say that. You're black. I mean, based on that document, you're a torso sitting here. You're 3/5 a person. And he couldn't even see through the color of his own skin, his views. It was so disheartening, you know, and I don't think it turns back. I really don't. I mean, I think the only saving grace is what you're doing in the internet.
Yeah, I know what's going to happen to the Republican Party. They're going to go extinct. It's not just false hope. Mm. Look, I get it. There's 25% of this country, as there is, by the way, of any country, that is fundamentalist and ignorant and hateful and fearful and hopeless. Okay, yeah. We're never going to win that 25% over.
Right.
And so the minute they see some sort of other, they're ready to attack.
Right.
Because it's mainly they're defined by their cowardice. they're driven by fear more than anything else in the world, right? And I'm so tired of their lies. And, well, Obama said the Constitution is a flawed document, and then they go nuts over it.
Right.
What has Trump said?
Trump has
called America every terrible name there is, the FBI, the CIA, the government, everything. If Obama had said 1% of what Trump had said, they would have lost their mind.
And calling for a clampdown on free press, just, you know, and cozying up to Vladimir Putin, just unbelievable. It's so, like, when I see that Make America Great hat, and then I know what he's done with Putin, it's all of what I could do to take a gun out, you know, and it's unbelievable. It's just, and the lies don't matter. They just don't matter. Like, when I saw those women interviewed after the Access Hollywood bust down, and, you know, especially, you know, the supporters, and it's like, well, you know, boys will be boys. Like, you know, even with Roy Moore, like, there's a group of people willing to sell out every single, principle that they have as long as they win the political fight. And I don't know when we got here or how we got here exactly, but it's an ugly place to be as a country.
Yeah. So, Paul, I feel like this is a little bit of a therapy session here.
Yeah, sorry.
So don't jump off the roof. Don't grab the gun. Don't do any of that.
Yeah.
Okay. Because here comes hope. All right.
Yeah.
And the establishment and Trump have opened up a Pandora's box, and all the different demons have definitely fly down. There are demons all over the place now.
Right.
But at the bottom of Pandora's box is hope. Mm. So let me explain that to you. It's not an empty hope. It's not Pollyannish. In the Doug Jones, Roy Moore election that just happened in Alabama. Mm. So there's a bunch of numbers, and not that many Republicans split from him, and white evangelicals still love him, and there's a lot of things to be encouraged and discouraged about. But here's the number that I think is the most important. Over 60% of the people under the age of 45 in the state of Alabama voted for the Democrat.
Mm.
Okay? If we've got 60% of under 45-year-olds in Alabama, the Republican Party is dead man walking.
Yeah.
They just don't know it.
Yeah.
It's like somebody did that Bruce Lee move on them, and they're still walking around, but their heart's about to explode in 12 hours.
That's hilarious. Why do I feel uncomfortable in my chest? Gee, oh, my heart's gone.
So we won over almost all the young. Yes, there's some young out there that go to Nazi marches in Virginia and stuff.
Yeah.
But they're a real small minded. They really are. They're very, very loud.
Yeah.
But the polling indicates that millennials are about 80% progressive.
Yeah.
So TikTok.
Exactly.
We'll be rid of these guys. You'll never be rid of the monsters that troll the internet, et cetera.
Right.
There's just no way to stop that. Right.
And exactly.
That's the downside of freedom.
Right.
But overall, we're going to win, and we're going to win decisively. 2020, we are going to rout them.
All right. Well, from your lips to God's ear, I want to have you on again. There's so much more I want to talk to you about. Your background's fascinating, and you're doing really important work out there, and I've been a big fan. Rebel Headquarters is a newly launched show. Young Turks comes before that, 6 to 8, 8:05 Rebel Headquarters, and just keep supporting the effort, everybody out there, because we got to make a change in this country. I appreciate you coming on, and I'd love to have you come on again sometime.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. And if anybody wants to, check out any of that, so you just type in the Young Turks or TYT anywhere on the internet, and you'll get our website, our YouTube page, our Facebook page. So, you know, whether you agree or disagree, and if you're listening, you probably agree. Come on.
Yeah.
check it out.
But you want people to disagree, too. I mean, that's the problem.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, you want both sides. You know, there was a time in this country when you read the op-ed page of the New York Times, and then you read the Wall Street Journal, and you considered all sides and then made your own decision as opposed to just looking for red meat. But I just, you're doing a fantastic job, and I wish you all the best, and keep doing what you're doing. So Young Turks, plug it into Google. You'll find a lot of great stuff to watch.
All right. Thank you so much, Paul. You're doing a great job doing. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. All right. That was Cenk Uygur. How great is that guy? Very, very cool. And it's very, very passionate. And I pronounced his name about 14 times before I recorded this. So I'm proud that I didn't screw it up. Hope to see you February 23rd and 24th at Gotham Comedy Club, right here in Manhattan.
And please continue to spread the word about the podcast and leave us some nice comments on iTunes. It always helps, but we want to keep building. Every month we're adding more and more listeners. So keep spreading the word, and we will see you next week.